Well, good morning. It's Friday, June 26th. You're listening to 88.5 KRFY. This is Panhandle Community Radio, and you've tuned in for North Idaho News of the Week. My name is Jack Peterson. Chris Bessler out today. Let's see. Will Love also out today. Will Love is becoming our usual co-host during the summertime months, but he's also out today. I think he's coaching a basketball team in Cheney, Washington right now. So I'm alone as a host, but I'm fortunate to be joined by senior writer for the Bonner County, for the Sandpoint Reader here on a bright and early Friday morning, Sansaray Mitchell. Hi, Sansaray.
Good morning. It's too early.
Yeah. Well, it's only 8 o'clock, but yeah, it's the time it does fly, mm-hmm. Anyway, it's 8 o'clock in the morning, and we're talking about the news here. I have a few headlines for you, but I'm glad to have Sansaray with us to talk about what's going on at the Panhandle Health District, as well as down at what is called the Panhandle Bike Ranch by some, and by some it's called a private property, I guess. I don't know. Yeah. Let's see. Okay, in state news, or in national news, really, the U.S. Forest Service has announced an emergency logging project over 5 million acres in Montana and Idaho. Counties included in the plan are Boundary County and Bonner County, as well as Kootenai County, Benoit, Shoshone, Latah, Idaho, and Clearwater. A huge logging project announced out of Missoula, Montana, in an 8-page emergency plan that says it addresses catastrophic wind damage done to federal forest land after two weather emergencies. Environmental watchdog groups say it's rushed and could result in millions of acres being used for commercial logging with an almost impossibly short public comment period. But this has now been announced. The emergency salvage effort is in response to the straight line and high wind events in December 2025 and April 2026. The Forest Service said that wind storms created large patches of overturned or downed trees. Wind felled and damaged trees of conifer species native to the northern Rockies are highly susceptible breeding material for associated native bark beetles, including pine engraver beetles, spruce beetle, Douglas fir beetle, and potentially fir engraver, and several species of wood-boring insects, unquote, the document said. The report also said that several years of drought conditions have stressed trees through both of these states, making them more susceptible to insects. This was released this Monday, June 22nd, and allows public comment through June 29th. That is next Monday. So 1 week of public comment, and that public comment period is open now and about to close. We could be seeing some significant logging coming our way, and you can find the map through the U.S. Forest Service website or contact the Forest Service if you have a public comment. Let's see. What else? Our local state Senate nominee for the Republican Party, Scott Herndon, has made the headlines as plan for eliminating property taxes altogether. It appears in the Idaho Ed News. Scott Herndon won his primary against Senator Jim Woodward, and at last weekend's Idaho Republican State Convention, he led the charge to add a plank to the party platform calling for the elimination of property taxes and a replacement with, quote, revenue sources that do not place a lien on a citizen's home. Let's see. The response from the Democratic Party, House Minority Leader Alana Rubel, says that making money maybe money will magically appear and will be fine. That is not a budget plan. That's preposterous. The newly elected first vice chair of the Idaho GOP, Adams County Commissioner Vicky Purdy, isn't sure. Told this is in a quote to Idaho Education News, Idaho Ed News. She isn't sure how Idaho could ever get rid of property taxes without a replacement, but it will be nice to shed some light on the issue. Quote, I don't expect that the state is just going to dump property taxes, said Vicky Purdy, a fellow Republican. Let's talk. Let's get down to business here, Sansaré. Let's get a little bit more local. For one thing, probably the most commented upon local news item right now, in terms of just public discourse on social media and live and in person, is the paid parking program. If you're interested in hearing about that, if you're interested in talking about parking, may I direct you to KRFY's website, where you can find the podcast, the recorded broadcast of Wednesday's morning show, where Chris Bessler and Susie Prez sat down with Mayor Jeremy Grimm, as well as, I always forget Jason Welker's title. He is the city development and planning director, I believe. Words to that effect. Both of them were here in the studio live on Wednesday morning. We recorded the whole show, and you can listen back to it. And the discussion was largely about the new paid parking that is going into effect next week, July 1st, which is, I believe, next Wednesday. So check that out. I will say that you can see downtown, you can see right in front of this radio station, a new parking meter, or do we call that a meter? A parking payment station?
Kiosk?
Sure, a kiosk. That's nice. I press the button. The button lights up. I press the button. Nothing happens. I think you need to wait until July 1st for something to happen when you press the button. But they appear to be installed and operational and just waiting for the sign from city government. I think it's worth noting, just for clarification, that parking downtown for the first 2 hours is still free, just as it is right now. That has not actually changed. What has changed is that you have to you go to one of these kiosks and acknowledge that you have parked, so that they can start that 2 hour timer for you. And this is in hopes of preventing people from coming downtown, parking, and staying all day, where that spot might be occupied by other citizens, other visitors to town. So that parking meter will go into effect on July 1st. Hey, there you go. That's in Sandpoint City News, and we shall see what happens next week when those turn on, how people adapt to them. Sansaré, okay. I know I said before we turned on the mics that we weren't going to talk about parking. Let's talk very, very quickly about parking. Do you think that people have a clear idea? Has word gotten out about what these parking meters are supposed to do? When you talk to people, do they understand what's going to happen on July 1st, or are people befuddled?
Everyone is befuddled.
That's what I think too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that I personally understand it, but I have listened to all these radio shows and I've read all these articles. I think that, and watch the press releases come out from the city. I think that, by and large, people see the parking meters going up, and there does seem to be a great deal of confusion in town about what does this mean.
Mm-hmm. And the city keeps, tweaking the plan as we're getting closer to the launch date, mm-hmm. changing the map around a little about what areas are 2 hours and 4 hours and whatnot. So I think once, after 2-3 weeks of everybody using the system, then people will get the hang of it. But right now that it's all theoretical, that nobody really understands.
That's kind of my feeling as well. And perhaps that's the feeling of the city, which is just that, yes, it's right now kind of, it's still a matter. It's, you can't clarify it all that much until it goes into effect, and then people do it once, and now you understand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So we'll see what happens next week. All right. The big news, and this has been going on now for months, and it's high time that we had you in here, Sansaray, and thank you for joining us to talk about the Panhandle Health District. We're going to talk about what's going on there. There was a major budgetary fight in May that was finally resolved this month, and then hopefully we'll have time also to talk about what's going on at the Panhandle Bike Ranch, so-called, which is down in Sagal, and which is the subject of a legal dispute right now between the county and county residents, and then the owners of the property, which is now officially a nonprofit organization and not a business. But let's start here talking about Panhandle Health District.
Mm-hmm.
We've kind of read the headlines on this radio show before, but for those just tuning in who maybe aren't familiar with what's going on with the Panhandle Health District, the Panhandle Health District represents the five northern counties of Idaho. It is not just Bonner County, but Bonner County plays a role, and its budget is set by the county commissioners of those five northern counties, correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I guess let's go back to, I think it was in May. I think it was last month. What happened in May at the meeting where the Panhandle Health District met with the county commissioners from those five counties, including ours?
So essentially, Panhandle Health District presented their budget or their proposed budget for fiscal year 2027,
mm-hmm.
which needed to be approved by June. And they have been essentially touring the five northern counties and giving presentations to various commissioners. And this was the culmination of all those efforts. So they didn't really go into detail about what they were spending on, but they did present that their proposed budget was $12,299,702. And that money is divided up between fees that the health district collects, taxes, and clinical visits, you know, insurance payouts or out-of-pocket payments from people receiving health care from them.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of that is that the five northern counties, Benoit, Bonner, Boundary, Kootenai, and Shoshone, all contribute a certain amount. That amount is determined by state statute, and it is based on the county's wealth and population. So relevant for us, Bonner County is the second, I assume, most populous slash richest mm-hmm. of these five counties. And Benoit and Shoshone are relatively small. And so we pay the second largest amount, which is $470,211. That doesn't even rival Kootenai, of course, which is the biggest, and they pay over $1 million, which the total amount that counties pay in only amounts to $2,216,903. Throwing a lot of numbers at you, I apologize.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, just to kind of, for the listeners, just to underline that, about half the budget is paid by Kootenai County.
Yes.
Okay, and then we pay the second largest share, maybe a what is that? About a fifth of the budget.
Good. Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then the remainder is paid by Benoit, Shoshone, and Boundary counties.
Yes. So,
and once again, this is something that we have to pay it. It's it's state mandated that that the Panhandle Health District exists and that its budget is covered by the counties.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. So the counties have no say in essentially whether or not they're going to pay, mm-hmm. and they have very little say in how much they will pay, because that is determined by state statute. And the health district comes forward each year and presents essentially what they need to function the next year. And this number from this year, this over $12 million, this really hasn't changed from years past. What changed this year was how they were allocating those funds. And so their big push for months and months now has been revitalizing their clinical services. And they wanted to change things up, have more clinic days in the various counties, hire more nurse practitioners, more people who are going to come in and have mental health services, who are going to do more with holistic, allopathic medicine that is aimed at treating more chronic conditions and lots of preventative medicine. So they're hoping to tackle epidemics of diabetes, heart issues, things like that. And so when they presented their budget back in May, that was what a lot of the money was going to go to. And the commissioners from the counties, even though they've been touring around and discussing this with them, they didn't feel that they understood enough of how this money was being spent and how it would benefit the counties to have these increased clinical services. So they took issue with that, and especially these smaller counties and Boundary County in particular was kind of against the idea of expanding clinical services because they already have private clinics with, say, Kootenai Health that are fulfilling those needs. And they didn't want a government program coming in and taking clients away from private practices or things like that. And so those were some of the big issues that they brought up in May. The other one that came from our county and from then chair of the Bonner County Board of Commissioners, Brian Domke, was that part of this budget included a cost of living adjustment for Panhandle Health District's workers. And Domke wasn't necessarily against this COLA, but he said that it creates a potential inequity because Bonner County has not yet voted on its budget, and they don't know if they will be able to pass a COLA for their workers. And so Domke was worried that he was going to vote to pass this cost of living adjustment for Panhandle Health District's workers, and then Bonner County workers wouldn't get it, and that would be unfair, in his words. He also said that he didn't have a solution to that because, according to statute, Panhandle Health District has to pass their budget well before Bonner County does. So there was really no way of fixing that issue.
Hmm.
So they voted the budget down in May, and then they told Panhandle Health District, come back with different ideas, tell us what we would save if we didn't pass this COLA, tell us what would happen if different counties could opt out of clinical services, and then we'll make the final decision. So they came back in May and essentially presented the same exact budget. They did the math, and they found out that if they cut the COLA, they would save the health district $180,000, around there, which is a lot, but in the grand scheme of $12
million. Out of $12 million, yeah.
Not much.
Mm-hmm.
Then they talked about potentially cutting clinical services. And while they thought that this would be a big-time money saver, because it's a $2.1 million budget, when they actually ran the numbers, cutting clinical services would only liberate about 78,000. And that's because the clinics generate revenue.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And so if you cut them, yeah, you cut what you spent on them, on the nurse practitioners that you're paying, but you're also cutting one of the big boons to the health district, one of the only revenue generating portions aside from, you know, fees for environmental services.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not cutting the overall administrative costs, because everything that the Panhandle Health District does comes under the administration, and the administration has to be there whether or not you have clinics.
Sure.
So clinics, the funds getting coming from those are subsidizing that. Mm-hmm. If you take that away, those administrative costs are still there.
And I mean, I guess presumably the, you know, the building is still there.
Yes.
Yeah. You're not cutting the overhead is, I guess, the point of it.
Exactly.
The administration, as you said. Yeah. Okay. Well, I didn't mean to interrupt. Go on. Okay.
So they discussed this at the June meeting.
Mm-hmm.
And this time we had a different representative from Bonner County, Commissioner Ron Korn, because our it's the chair of the board who goes down, and mm-hmm. our chair rotates. And Korn has been heavily involved with Panhandle Health District and shepherding this budget and bringing forward especially concerns about informed consent, specifically with childhood vaccines. And so he is very familiar with all of the issues that was going on down there, and he really didn't prioritize the COLA the way that Brian Domke did because he is essentially so happy with all of the other changes that Panhandle Health District proposed. So they went back, they discussed the same budget that they had previously voted down, and they decided this time, hey, we'll give it a year.
Mm-hmm.
If these changes to the clinics that we've funded aren't profitable, if people aren't using them, then we don't have to vote to do this again next year. But let's give it a try and see if it benefits the community. And one of the big arguments that satisfied the other concern from May is that they brought forward some research and some conversations they had with private practices and different regional hospitals. And they proposed that clinic days at Panhandle Health will actually help local hospitals and other practitioners, because people will come to the clinics for free or reduced treatment and preventative medicine, which will keep them at a healthier level throughout their lives. So they're not putting off medical treatment and then, you know, having a heart attack or having some other major medical issue that sends them to the emergency room.
Mm-hmm.
For super costly procedures that potentially they can't pay because they're not insured or whatnot.
This is the old, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, or what, I can't remember exactly what the maxim is, but mm-hmm. yeah. Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. For the individual and for the hospital.
Yeah.
Not having to foot the bill.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're hoping that these clinic days will help everyone stay healthier, help expand medical access, especially in the rural communities, and lighten the burden on existing medical providers.
Mm-hmm.
So they did vote for this and passed it. And now
this was presented by where did this originate? Or this was presented by the health district.
Yes.
And then passed by the county commissioners. Yeah.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
Sorry. Mm-hmm.
And our commissioner, Ron Korn, actually was the one who made the motion to pass it,
mm-hmm.
which previously our commissioner, Brian Domke, seconded the motion to dismiss it. So
yeah.
Different commissioners, different outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Hmm. Interesting. Well, okay. But the budget is now passed and the clinics are still open, I guess, in all five counties.
The budget is passed. The clinics are open. Mm-hmm. They're still determining the days that they will be open in the various counties. That's mm-hmm. still fluctuating as they're hiring more people, and there will be different services available different days of the week.
Mm-hmm.
They've already started hiring the new staff who will come in and fill some of those gaps. And what we haven't touched on was in between those two budget meetings, they also put forward, again, Ron Korn's concerns about informed consent.
Aha!
Aha!
Here we are, which is the headline in this week's paper.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
And so they approved a new informed consent policy to kind of meet the needs of some of his concerns.
Mm-hmm.
And what they felt the concerns of a lot of individuals who have become skeptical of major healthcare providers and government agencies since COVID and all of the controversies that that stirred up.
Mm-hmm.
And so this new informed consent policy is, we believe, and the health district believes as well, the first to pass in Idaho. And it doesn't change much, which was was a good thing for a lot of people who were worried that this was going to promote an anti-vax mindset by, say, giving each person who came in for a vaccine a list of all of the scary ingredients that we can't understand. And so this really met in the middle and said, we need to make sure that patients understand what they are consenting to, what they're putting in their bodies. But at the same time, we need to acknowledge that we have been doing a good job of keeping people informed. And there is no need to mistrust our local providers. And so the informed consent policy basically just makes paperwork that outlines and adds to the medical record confirmation that they are indeed making sure people understand what's going on. And there are several ways that they're going to do this. So they're going to add additional information to the information packets that you already receive for procedures or for vaccines. These will not, as many people feared, be kind of, you know, conspiracy pieces you found on Reddit. These will be vetted by the FDA and the CDC and other medical research papers. So these are legitimate sources that are going to supplement the sources they already hand out. And another addition to the policy is it clearly outlines that a nurse practitioner or a doctor, not a medical assistant, has to come in and talk with you and get the consent to make sure that they can fully explain whatever questions the patient may have to the patient's level, which, as they said in the meeting, some people may be at a sixth grade level of understanding.
Mm-hmm.
Some people might be at a postdoctorate level.
Mm-hmm.
And so you really need someone who has gone through all of that schooling, all that education, to be able to tailor their responses to whomever walks through the door. And then at the end of all that, they give them time to sit with it so they're not being, you know, coerced or rushed. Give them time to ask questions and then come back in. And if they consent to the procedure or to the vaccine or whatever, then they will both sign a form that says, this patient has informed consent. I was there giving them the informed consent, and submit that into the medical record so that they can go back and verify.
Well, Sansre, to interrupt again here, what comes to my mind here is that it sounds time consuming. Is that this seems like it's going to slow things down a little bit at the clinic, and perhaps more than a little bit. Was that a concern discussed at all? I mean, is that a concern that anyone else has, or is that just what's occurring to me right now as we're speaking on the radio?
It's certainly a concern that mm-hmm. I had and that has been brought up in the past. It wasn't brought up at the most recent meeting where this policy was actually passed.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as all of the board members who voted for it, as they have expressed in the past, it's a worthwhile time consumer.
Mm-hmm.
It's better to do things properly and make sure people understand the benefits and also the costs and the costs of refusing treatment. So it's all right that it kind of slows things down, and they will need to bake in that extra time per meeting different patients and scheduling things.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they agreed that the time commitment and the actual cost of these improvements is worth it to strengthen faith in the health district and to ensure that especially parents are comfortable with medical procedures that are being done to their children. And in Ron Korn's words, to increase medical freedoms, whatever that may entail.
Well, I have some questions, but have you come to the end of the story here, Sansaray?
Yes, go right ahead. Okay. I talked for way too long.
No. Ron Korn and Board Chair Thomas Fletcher. So our County Commissioner Ron Korn, currently the chair of the Bonner County Commission, and Panhandle Health District Board Chair Thomas Fletcher have some kind of personal relationship, do they not? Or, I mean, what is the relationship between those two?
They have a relationship through Panhandle Health District, and they have definitely, I think, gotten closer over the months, because Thomas Fletcher is also one of our representatives. So he's a Bonner County resident.
Yeah, he's a Bonner County, yes. Okay, there you go.
And so he works closely with our board in particular, and he has been sort of the point of contact for our board and for Ron Korn, who then often attends the Panhandle Health District meetings with him. Ron Korn is not a member of the board. He is essentially a Bonner County liaison to Bonner County's representative on the board.
I see.
But he has been very vocal and submitted a lot of ideas through Thomas Fletcher. And so he's sort of been Ron Korn's representative in a way, or his mouthpiece. And that it helps that they have a lot of shared beliefs, which months and months ago, people were very worried were anti-vax and anti-medical procedure. They have sort of toned down, at least Thomas Fletcher has toned down the rhetoric on that and has stated that he is not anti-vax. But both share a core belief and advocate for this. They believe that the CDC, the World Health Organization, and the American government are constantly lying to us, keeping us sick to a certain extent by focusing on pushing pharmaceuticals and by trying to generate money by giving us vaccines that can potentially make us sicker. This is all paraphrasing, of course, but they have repeatedly used the phrase "the government is lying to us." So that was one of the big concerns when in the early days when they were talking about this informed consent policy, was that because its two main proponents believe that the government is constantly lying and manipulating us, that they would be using less than reputable sources. And the actual policy that came forward clearly stated that they are going to use government resources. It would not have passed otherwise, because there are enough members of the Panhandle Health District Board that are still medical practitioners that are not anti-vax adjacent.
And Fletcher himself, Panhandle Health District Board Chair Thomas Fletcher, he is a doctor.
He is, yes.
Yes, as well. And all, I guess the Is the whole board made up of medical professionals?
No. So our other Bonner County representative is Glenn Bailey, who is a former county commissioner, and he is not a medical professional. A lot of them are. And some of them are still working, still practicing. And I think those ones who are a little bit more consistently in touch with other medical providers and, you know, working over them are the ones who have been advocating for more trust in the medical system and reminding everyone that while we're talking about these big concepts of, you know, what do we believe in the CDC, all these things, that the average nurse practitioner who went to medical school and is part of his or her community and down here doing the groundwork is not lying to you. Mm-hmm. They are trying their best to help everyone, and we should believe them on the individual level.
Yeah. The Panhandle Health District, it does a number of things. It's involved in environmental, I guess, not regulation, but environmental regulation enforcement, right? And then it has these clinics, and the clinics are open in all five counties. To usually one in Bonner County, it's one day a week. I think, is that right? I'm trying to, just for the sake of the listeners, what does the Panhandle Health District do? Is, I guess, my question. We could talk about that for a long time, but briefly, yes.
Well, to answer your first question. For the month of June, they're going to be one day a week.
Okay.
But July, the schedule is going to change, and we don't really know how many days they're going to be up in Bonner County. As far as what the Panhandle Health District does as a big overview, they have the clinical services, and they do a lot of environmental regulation. So they are who you go to if... you put in a septic tank and you need it checked, or you put in a an application to put in a septic tank, they're the ones who come out and say, okay, yes, you can put it where you said you can, or no, the groundwater doesn't percolate enough. This will contaminate local water.
Right.
They're the ones that certify people who put in different things like that. They do water testing and... just lots of regulation, especially with building codes and businesses. And then the other side is the clinics and then the medical direction they give.
Okay. And the clinics are open to the public. You can go in here in Bonner County. It's on Pine Street in Sandpoint, right?
Yes.
Okay. And you can go one day a week and receive medical attention, I guess. Not emergency medical attention, but
no, it's not an ER.
Yeah, but it's. I mean, it's essentially sort of a doctor's office, right? I mean, you can make an appointment and go visit the Panhandle Health District if you want to.
Yes, and they do accept walk-ins.
Okay. All right, Sansare. Well, we're talking for a long time here. It's as usual. We've gone over our time. Real quick, what's going on at the Panhandle Bike Ranch? What's the what is the latest there? The Panhandle Bike Ranch down in Sagal has been the subject of it's been all over, of course, the letters to the editor page in the Sandpoint Reader and our all over social media. The dispute is between the owners of the property covers 170 acres in Sagal, and the owners of the property have built a number of trails and amenities, but they've built more than just trails in the dirt. I mean, they've done some construction. There's wood bridges and things like that to make for mountain biking mountain biking use. And so the dispute is between the owners of that property and their neighbors who don't the neighbors don't believe that the property should be open to the public, I believe. Is that fair to say?
Yes. So the neighbors, their big issue was that it's a small dirt road and they don't want all the people using the bike park to drive past their house and kick up a whole bunch of dust and, you know, kill their refrigerators and other things with air intake. And so they have been opposing it for a very long time. The issue right now is the Panhandle Bike Ranch is a nonprofit. And so by their argument and by definition, they are not a profit generating revenue source. They're not a commercial industry. Mm-hmm. And right now they're considered a commercial industry. And so they can't do a lot of the things that they want to do, like build a bathroom for the bikers, because the county considers them commercial and they need to get a conditional use permit, which they previously had, but repeated appeals by the neighbors overturned. Not because the court ruled against Panhandle Bike Ranch, but because they said that the approval by the Bonner County Board of Commissioners didn't have enough detail, essentially, to say why they approved it. And so the bike ranch has been suing the county to get essentially their commercial status revoked so that they can consider themselves, their land use, a park, which is approved, and then they don't need a conditional use permit. So they want to be called a park. Bonner County has said they're not going to reconsider what they are. So Panhandle Bike Ranch sued back in January, and they opened, as if nothing was wrong, in May. And then just a few days into their opening, the county said, you don't have a conditional use permit, and we haven't considered you a park, so you need to cease and desist and stop having people biking on your trails. And so this upcoming district court hearing on June 30th, this is going to determine whether or not the Panhandle Bike Ranch needs to close down operations, and hopefully whether the county needs to reconsider if it's a park or if it is indeed a commercial enterprise. I say hopefully because this hearing was specifically brought on for the cease and desist letter. And so I don't see how it would be possible to have a ruling for one part of the issue and not the entire thing. But we will see what happens. They definitely don't want to close down because, of course, the previous owners and the board have sunk millions of dollars into this, and it is very heavily used and loved by the regional mountain biking community. I don't mountain bike, but apparently it's a really amazing course.
Okay. Here's a question I've never heard asked before. Has the county considered paving the road? The main complaint that I hear is about dust, I think, from raised up by the people driving on the gravel road, more traffic than was expected. Could the county just say, well, this is now a road that has more traffic, and so we need to pave it?
That is a question that the public has brought up quite a few times, and also just the question of, you know, if Panhandle Bike Ranch is doing dust abatement already, why don't they just sink some more money and pay to have it paved? And no one has really given a straight answer, because I think at this point there's so much animosity, and especially with Sagal residents who, you know, like the way things have always been, that it's spiraled too much that now a simple fix like that is kind of out of the question because everybody's so mad. And the other issue is they're trying to preserve Sagal's rural character, in their words. And so paving roads to a certain extent goes against the idyllic Idaho rural rugged pothole filled gravel roads.
Yes. Right. It does feel different to drive down a paved road than a gravel road. I guess it's true. Oh, my. Well, Sansere, this has been a long one. Anything else you want to talk about while you're here in the studio before we turn it over to... I queued up a song by the Kinks.
Ooh.
We'll play a little National Health in appreciation for the Panhandle Health District.
Love it. Love the Kinks.
Yeah.
I say, on a parting note, if you know former Sandpoint High School choir teacher John Brownell...
Ah, yes.
He is retiring after 37 years with the school district. So give him a hug or a high five or a thank you for your service, because he was my choir teacher, and he was reader editor Zach Hagedon's choir teacher in middle school. He was mine in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the difference between that was in the 80s or in the 2010s. So he's been around for a while.
Right. Yeah. He's been a, he's a local fixture in, mm-hmm. in town, an institution has been John Brownell. I've known his name since I think before I even moved here. He was a, you have a lovely piece in this week's Reader, and I'll just acknowledge that he did a bang-up job. He brought the choir down for our holiday spectacular, I think, 2 years ago, and that was one of the real highlights of the show, having the high school choir come in and sing for the radio station. I mean, you for the audience in attendance and on the air. And what a living legend is John Brownell. And off to retirement he goes.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
And I need to clarify. I think I just implied that he was Zach Hagedon's teacher in the 80s. that's a little too old. It was the 90s, but he has been teaching since 87.
Okay, he's been teaching since 87. He taught Zach Hagedon in the 1890s. Okay,
the 1790s.
Yeah.
Sorry, okay. Zach.
No, kidding. And then Zach's voice, I suppose, went too low to be useful in a high school choir, so he had to stop after middle school. No. Okay, we're going to play the Kinks. Enough kidding around. Sansere, this has been great and very informative. Thank you very much. Thank you for continuing to cover the what's going on at the Panhandle Health District, mm-hmm. I think more closely than any other journalist in any of these five northern counties.
Well, so, thank you.
Yeah. Here we go. National Health from the Kinks coming up next, and then Nauta's Eclectic Mix all day long here on 88.5 KRFY.
Tension, man's invention is the biggest killer that's around today. Let the tension out, or it will build and build inside and strike you down someday. Nervous tension, man's invention is.